Coming up on today's episode, some new pictures of the Starship prototype, there's some news about the ozone hole over Antarctica, and Tesla finally catches up to the Audi e-tron in safety ratings. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool stuff happening right now that's going to make tomorrow, today's, totally ludicrous. I screwed that up. Anyway, I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel, and with me today, it's a two-man show, Ben Sullins.
That's right. This is Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut with Teslanomics. How are you guys doing? What's going on, Joe? You guys, it's just us. It feels
you guys,
weird.
Just me. All my multiple personalities.
Well, I did see that multiplicity video you did, yeah, or whatever.
That's true. That was a while back. So where is Tim exactly? He's just working on the Aerospike video, doing Aerospike things?
I assume so. Apparently he has something to share with us.
Oh, yes. So should we just go to that right now?
Let's do it.
Hi, guys. It's me, Tim Dodd. And I'm in New Orleans right now. I flew in last night. Pretty late, so I ended up spending all day today, literally the entire day, filming with an Aerospike engine, because as you know, I've been working on this Aerospike video for like a long time. How do you say a long time? For 2 months or something now? This is a way bigger endeavor than I ever thought. And as you know, again, I've talked about this on the show, that my attitude towards the Aerospike has gone from like, Aerospikes suck, and they do suck at some things, but I just ended up, I kind of fell in love with them. Like, they're beautiful. I mean, if you can't tell by my shirt, I obviously am quite fond of them. I think they're really, really, really cool. So what I'm going to do today, since it sounds like you guys on the show already talked about some of the Starship stuff that happened this week, we're going to be talking about Starship, I guarantee, a ton next week as I get ready to go down to Boca Chica. And also, I'm sure that we're going to be talking about it after the Starship presentation on the 28th. So I figured today I'd kind of give you guys a little rundown on some of the, just a little bit more perspective stuff on the Aerospike, some of the things I've learned in the past little bit about Aerospikes again, give you guys a little demo, but we're also going to cover the Why Don't They Just segment today. Since I'm not with the guys, I apologize. But, so, here's what I saw today. I just want to explain this for you guys. So I was out of the Infinity Science Center in Mississippi, which is, you know, about 40 miles away from here. What is that, like 65 kilometers or whatever, away from downtown, like, New Orleans. We flew in last night. I got up this morning, went out there to Infinity Science Center. This is outside of Stennis Flight Center, which is where NASA tests a bunch of their engines and all that stuff. Went out there just to shoot with this one engine, and this is the XRS-2200, and there's only two that I could find in existence. One is at Marshall Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. That one doesn't have any turbo pumps, so I flew all the way out here. My friend Michael and I came out here to shoot, and I flew us out here to see the one at Infinity Science Center because it had turbo pumps. The problem shooting with this engine is it is suspended from the ceiling, and I knew this ahead of time. It was suspended from the ceiling. It's like, you know, 10 feet off the ground, or like 3 meters off the ground at least. It was up there. It's really high, so you can't actually get any good. So all the shots with me in it, it's kind of over my shoulder. It's kind of cool. It's just hard to get a perspective on how massive this thing is. It's huge. It would fill a room easily, and now I want one. Like I said, I think I want one. So I definitely have fallen more and more in love with this engine, hence flying all the way out here to see one, basically. But the XRS-2200 is a demonstrated version of a full-scale linear aerospike engine. So at the time, Lockheed Martin was working on the XRS-2200 just to demonstrate all the technologies needed for the RS-2200, which had been literally like basically doubling the entire engine. It would have had a bigger expansion ratio, so more, it would have been a lot better in the vacuum of space. And it would have just been an awesome engine, and it was to be used with the Venture Star program. Now, the Venture Star program had development almost entirely completely done with the X-33. It was a suborbital, just tech demonstrator, and it was to use these XRS-2200s. And then after all the stuff was proven out, you know, the most of the flight and the landing and all that stuff, because it was going to take off vertically, land horizontally. It was basically a space shuttle replacement. Single stage to orbit, but the X-33 was just the atmospheric demonstrator. It was only going to do suborbital stuff. Then they were going to move on to a full single stage to orbit Venture Star vehicle, which would have had seven RS-2200 engines. And each RS-2200 is like, I remember it's about as powerful as like an RS-25 space shuttle main engine. So these are big, big engines, and they're very powerful. And the so you can think of the XRS, or you can think of the X-33 similar to how we think of the relationship with like the current Mark 1 and Mark 2 starships, how they're just, I don't know if they'll ever go orbital, but for sure we're first going to see them going up, practicing these atmospheric maneuvers and doing some of those kind of riskier things. The lowest cost like development that you can to be able to test all the technologies, especially some of the new ones like the body flaps and stuff like that, some of this reorbital orbital stuff. And so I for some reason, something about that, just it's cool to live back and look at a program that got pretty far. They got, you know, like 85% of the way done with the vehicle and the launch pad and everything. The launch pad was done, ready to go. And seeing these engines, these relics of history, it's really cool to me. And I feel quite honored to be able to make this my job, to be able to go around and see stuff like this and relive some of the engineering decisions that people, this was now about 20 years ago, were making, you know, for the Venture Star program. And it's really, really, really cool to be able to get up close with that hardware. It's fascinating stuff. I cannot wait for you to see the footage. I mean, there we got some really, really good high quality, of course, 4K footage of details that, you know, have never really been seen, at least on the internet before. A lot of the footage you see of these engines are terrible. I really do wish we could have like lowered them down to the ground and actually been able to get up close to like the thrust chambers and stuff. But we were able to get cameras on long, like really long selfie sticks, basically. It's stuck onto a tripod and stick like an Osmo Pocket up inside, basically. And same with this like cool 360 cam that Michael brought. And we're going to have some really cool footage. And I spent the entire day shooting the intro for this video, the official intro. And yeah, I can't wait for you guys to see this video because I've been working so hard on, there's basically, here, I'm going to give you the short and sweet of why aerospikes are good and why they're bad. They're good because you can essentially fire as vacuum optimized nozzle as you want. So you can make a very big expansion ratio, something that converts all of the thermal and pressure energy into kinetic energy. The more that expansion ratio from the size of your throat of your rocket engine out to the nozzle exit, the more, the bigger that ratio and the longer that nozzle, the more you convert pressure and heat into exhaust gas velocity, which is a good thing. It makes an engine more efficient. And the problem is a Bell nozzle, you can't get a huge one to fire on the ground because it actually ends up with what's called flow separation, where the ambient air pressure squeezes in on the exhaust and peels it off of the walls of the nozzle. And that's bad, right? That's a good, it actually will literally destroy the engine if you have too big of a nozzle at sea level. So despite you wanting as big of a nozzle as you can, because basically, you know, the rocket's only at sea level for a second, and then after that it's just getting thinner and thinner. And if you actually look at it, you know, it's at half a bar. So one bar of pressure would be at sea level. It's at half a bar, and like, I don't even remember, it's something like 5,000 meters, you know, like within seconds, it's already dropped by half. So you want your nozzle to be as big as possible. And that's what aerospikes do. They allow you to have a huge nozzle that actually can operate at sea level and still operate and be very efficient in the vacuum space, basically as efficient as a Bell nozzle. And I think that's pretty cool. The trick is, the hard part is, that's the one advantage it has. The disadvantage is it's thermally backwards. So all the things that you need to keep, the hardest parts to keep cool, there's more of. So the throats or throat of the chamber is at least doubled and many times like tenfolded. So it's really hard to keep cool. And it's heavier in general because there's so much more piping and complexity. Even though it looks simple because it's kind of backwards, it's literally an inside out engine is what it is. And because of that, most people just kind of come to the same conclusion. So you have to wait for my full video, my full breakdown to really know all of the details. We'll go super deep into it, but I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about it and give you a little teaser and show you what I learned today and what I got up close and personal. So it was awesome. It was really, really cool. I was sad I couldn't film this morning with Our Ludicrous Future guys. I miss you guys already. It's been fun that we did a live thing, but this week has been too busy for me. So that video I need to have out by the end of the month or else I'm going to lose my mind. So that's that update. So speaking of losing our mind, why did I do that myself? Here is the Why Don't They Just for this week. And again, we've talked about this on the show already, but I keep seeing this over and over and over and over and over, so I figure we better just talk about it. This comes from Pierre Alain Chevalier at pchevalier83. Basically, why don't they turn the space launch system into a gravity-creating rotating system as outlined in the following video? So this is, we keep talking, we get all these questions about artificial gravity. There's a really good video here by, who did this one? This is Small Stars. It's a really, really compelling video about, you know, why artificial gravity is great, et cetera, why we need it to be able to do the things we want to do, especially going to Mars. It's a beautiful video. And we've talked about it on the show again already about why don't they just use artificial gravity on starships, spin them up. Of course, and we just talked about this recently, but I've seen this like 100 times. Tim, talk about this. The big thing is that, is it really necessary? I think my takeaway now is I think eventually we will absolutely do something like this. It is advantageous for human health and all that stuff. And even, you know, if you can have toilets that can work in 1G, that would probably simplify some things. Some of those things, and even as they mentioned in the video, things like sleeping in 1G or some gravity, like, you know, 50% gravity would be probably advantageous. There'd be some things in that sense that would be advantageous. But is it really necessary for a 6-month journey to Mars? And then you get on Mars and you do have some gravity, you have 38% gravity. So it's good enough. And then you're there for about a year and 6 months back, basically. So really, you only have 6 month stints in zero gravity. Is all of that complexity and those maneuver, you know, all the heavy trusses and all that stuff, regardless of whether we're talking Starship or space launch system, like Pierre's asking, is it necessary? For this short of a journey, I just think it's going to be easier to say no. It's not necessary. We've had people stay in space in microgravity for almost a year, so very long term, without any, I mean, yes, they land and they're weak and all that stuff, but I think we'll just have to come up with a training regimen that allows them to land on 38% Martian gravity and train and rehab for a couple days before they consider, you know, egressing the vehicle. And just because I get asked it all the time, I wanted to bring that up again, that it's just one of those things, like, eventually, sure, when we have routine flights and we're doing all this stuff and we don't want, you know, more normal people probably get sick and all that stuff or might maybe have more hard problems, but so when we're doing routine trips to Mars and back, yeah, we'll probably eventually get artificial gravity going. But for now, it's good enough. And that's, it's just really probably not necessary, especially for the first, I don't know, dozen flights or something. And then maybe eventually we'll start doing like 2.0. It's a little more creature comforts? Yeah, creature comforts and things like that. So I just kept seeing it over and over and over again because the video is really good, very compelling. And, yeah, so you guys can stop sending us that video because, yes, we've all seen it. But it's and we have, again, talked about it on the show, I think even 2 times before that. So let's drop the zero gravity or artificial gravity thing, at least for the time being, until we have something more substantial about it. But it is still a fun one to adjust because it's definitely makes sense. We've seen it in science fiction forever. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of a fun one. So that's going to do it for me. Again, I know we've already talked about what video is coming up for me. I'm working on an aerospike video, tons of animations, all that stuff. You know, like I said, I just filmed for an entire day with an aerospike, basically. So yeah, that's going to do it for me. I'm going to pop it either back to the guys or the show's going to end awkwardly. We'll see how this gets edited. But thanks for everything, guys. We'll catch you later. I hope you guys have a fantastic week. Bye.
So I hope you enjoyed that. We'll be enjoying it later right along with you.
That was incredible.
That was incredible.
I can't believe he got him to do that. We don't know what Tim did.
I never thought Elon would do that on camera, but that's
breaking
Tim
news.
Got him to do it.
Yeah. Awesome. So before we get too deep into the stories and stuff, I do just want to give a big thanks to everyone that came out last week for our 1 year anniversary. We posted the video. I don't know. We may do a better edited cut of that video because I think it was like the footage was like 2.5 hours long. So and there was even we were on stage and talking to people much more longer than that. So big shout out to everyone that came out. That was super fun. Joe, I know you had a good time.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. And to anybody who came up afterwards and like wanted to get a picture and put their arm around me, I'm sorry if I was super cagey. It's just I had been up on that stage and it was really hot up there. Like, it was really hot up there. And my shirt was just soaked through with sweat. So like people were like doing this. I'm like, oh, you don't want that. Trust me.
Well, and it's funny that you were sweating because you live in a place where it's far hotter than it is here. And so there's just so many people. I think we had 90 people that bought tickets, and I don't know how many the final tally was that showed up. It was kind of a chaos once it all started. But thanks to everyone for coming, because that was super fun. And obviously we're going to do it again next year. We don't know where yet, to be determined, but we will, you know, I think the Cowboys Stadium isn't being used because that team's not doing anything. I'll just piss everyone off right there.
I'm actually going to a Cowboys game this weekend.
What?
Yeah, I've never been before.
Do you know what sport it is they're playing? Is it?
Handball, I think? Or football. Football. That's
right. Football Americano.
Yeah. No, it was my dad's birthday at the end of last month, so I got him tickets to a Cowboys game.
Nice.
Never been before, so that'll be fun.
Yeah. So.
But I'll get to scope out the area and make sure that it's got enough seating if we wanted to do something in Dallas.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I hear it's pretty cheap. There's not used that often, so, you know, it's a thing. Jerry Jones is pretty generous man.
Oh, yeah, he's a very economical kind of guy.
Yeah. Speaking of economics,
go for it.
Let's talk about the Model 3, the most economical version of Tesla. They recently earned a IIHS Top Safety Pick Plus, not Turbo Pro Max XR, whatever, but Top Safety Pick Plus. The highest possible safety award. So this is awesome. Now, they've actually been testing the Tesla Model 3 for a while. These are the guys that do the crash tests, and we're going to look at them here. And so if you guys are listening, definitely go back and watch these. We'll put links to them in the show notes, so you should be able to click on it and watch it on your phone as well. But
watch some cars crash.
Oh, man, this is glorious what they did here to these cars. So we kind of expected this. You know, the NHTSA safety ratings have been out for a while, and the Tesla Model 3 was the highest one they ever rated for, I believe it was injury, like probability of an injury was the lowest. So the safest car ever rated by them, next to the Model S, which was next to the Model X. There was some dispute about the terminology there that was used. You know, apparently they didn't like Tesla talking about it in that light. But if you just look at the raw data, that is clearly the story it told. So I guess this wasn't a surprise. But, you know, an Audi apparently had already done this. Maybe they paid extra to, you know, like expedite their testing results or something like that. But just take a look at this. So the first one here, this is a driver-side small overlap IIHS crash test. Gloriousness. Bam!
We need some music on the background. Some crash music.
So this is a, basically, so I'll try to describe it. A red Tesla Model 3 driving very fast, hitting like the corner of a building, let's say.
Yeah. The driver's side corner.
Correct. Yeah. I guess you could say that this would be like a car, but a car would move if it hit it. So it's not quite that.
It's kind of neat when you look at it from that overhead angle. It kind of like shears and pushes the car to the right a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if it was designed that way or if it just, that's what the physics does.
Yeah. And the dumb crash test dummy has paint on his face, so he was clearly going to a Cowboys game. Man, look at those camera mounts. I'm kind of jealous. I kind of want those. All right, so that was the first one. That was pretty incredible. Yeah, I think that the most telling angle was this one here, was the overhead angle where, I mean, this would not be a pleasant experience. But yeah, it kind of just shifted the car.
Yeah.
Except for the wheel, the driver's side, you know, front wheel, it looks like a pretty good result, man. That's like you would probably be okay in that scenario. Mm-hmm. Nobody go try that. Okay, so now let's do the side crash test. This is where I believe they ram something into the side of it. Mm. Look, there's like a standing room people here, all with their cell phones out. How do I get invited to this party?
No kidding, I want to do that.
Yeah,
it doesn't even have to be a Tesla, just any car. That'd be fun.
I mean, how awesome. Like, I would totally, oh man, who are the? Do I need to go work there? It's probably like a really boring job. It's like people are like, you don't want to work here. But how cool would this be? I would love to come.
Do they
film
have safety
that.
Goggles on?
So this is like a another like car bots. Hitting. Look at that! It's basically like an electric car that they made. Oh, dude, that's pretty rough right there. This must be like a truck that they're testing, but it's electric. Look at that! It's just like an electric car that they made, an electric ramrod. Ooh. Yeah. Now wait, was the okay? So there's a kid,
kid
in the
back
seat. Wow. So the okay, yeah, that's
the kid doesn't have any arms.
So it's a it's an odd test. Okay.
People listening to this are just like, okay.
So what we're watching here is this like skeleton of an electric truck ramming into the side of a blue Tesla Model 3 right at the driver's door. Now, was the driver window open here? Because this looks kind of strange. Let's see if it shatters. Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah, it shatters.
It does. Okay, but... Oh, but the airbag comes in before the glass from the window even hits it.
Yeah, see in the backseat there?
Wow. Dude,
that's
nuts.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll... That's shocking. Okay, so that was number
That's
two.
That's amazing that they can blow up those airbags faster than the glass breaking.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry, that's kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, like how fast
And
does
I know that's
to
not
be?
Like
okay,
a Tesla
now,
thing. That's just how airbags work, but it's still amazing.
Yeah. Now, here we go. So this is another one. This is similar to the first one, I believe, where it's a overlap test where it runs into something. Oh, but this one is not.
No, it's just head on, direct.
Kind of head on yeah. to the pretty center.
So what's that thing it's running into? It's got like it looks like pizza boxes or something. I'm guessing that's supposed to be like the back end of a car.
It's a good question.
Oh, so that's actually kind of a corner.
It kind of looks like to me a freeway gore point barrier. Uh-huh. Right, like if you're on a freeway and you're taking an off ramp and you miss and you hit that, you know, what's in between there, and there's usually
so it collapses a little bit.
Yeah, there's some give to, and usually they'll have like four or five of them lined up in a row, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man.
Think about how many Model 3s they bought and then just smashed them all to hell.
Well, I think Tesla has to give them to them, don't they?
Oh,
otherwise,
I guess, yeah.
Otherwise, you don't get a rating.
True.
No rating for you. So this is good news for people that are either Model 3 owners or looking to buy a Model 3. Yes, it is extremely safe. It is arguably the safest car in its class. You know, safest ever tested. But again, you know, there are different categories of things and different kinds of tests. So good news, man. I mean, that's one of Tesla's biggest things. And it's literally plastered all over the factory. In fact, I met a guy who works at Tesla, and he was in a Model X. I think they were wanted to buy one, and you know, nobody gets discounts, and you know, Tesla doesn't pay top dollar for depending on your position. So him and his family were renting a Model X, and they got just absolutely T-boned at like 40 miles an hour or something going through a light where they were just driving normal, but the other guy ran a red light and just smashed right into him. Mm-hmm. Everybody's totally fine. Not even like hospital visits, like checked out by, you know, fire trucks or, you know, paramedics and stuff, but then just completely walked away from it, went home and was fine. And the guy actually got to meet Elon and talk about it. And it was a big deal. They like have a photo of this Model X that is just trashed all over the factory. And they say above it, like, this is why we do this. So, you know, it's not like, hey, Ben Sullins from Teslanomics is coming. Let's put that sign up. Like, it wasn't like that. So safety is truly at the heart of what Tesla designs into their vehicles, you know, among many other awesome, fun things. But that, you know, this just reinforces that whole thing. So awesome news.
Yeah, I feel like the safety thing doesn't actually filter out into the general public very much. I mean, it might be a big thing for Tesla, but like, it's not something you hear that much about. In fact, of course, thanks to clickbait and stuff, the thing you hear the most about is if one catches fire or something on the highway. So everybody's like, oh, electric cars are dangerous, but they're actually safer because of the crumple zones, especially in the front. Like there's no engine up there that gets smashed into the driver's cabin. It's just all crumple zone and So I think that's true of most electric cars. It's not just Tesla, although they probably have some, do some things that others don't, maybe. But
well, if you look at some of the other ones, like the Porsche Taycan, it has actually a ton of stuff in the front. There is a frunk, but I think they literally just did that to be like, see, we got one too. It's like you can put a sandwich in there, maybe, you know, So that's a thing. So, yeah, I mean, it does vary, but you're totally right about specifically about Tesla, how the front of the car is pretty Spartan and there's not a lot there. So it really is just all there to give. And so that's why, yeah, those kind of crashes, it just does so much better. Obviously, same is true for Model S and Model X. So. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Now, the other aspect of it that I understand is that the battery pack itself plays a big factor in the safety of it, in that it's so rigid and it's so densely packed with material and it's so strong that obviously it gives it an extremely low center of gravity, which really helps with rollovers and those kind of things. But also when other things hit it, those other things bounce off because the battery just doesn't have any give in it. And it's so strong that now it would be interesting if you did a crash test like this, Tesla versus Tesla, where it like was Model 3 versus Model 3 head on 40 miles an hour. Bam. You know, something like that to see, because I guarantee you the results would be very different than running this little, you know, skeleton thing into it because of the strength of it. So the battery pack, as far as I understand, also has a big role in terms of the safety, in terms of how strong the vehicle is. So,
yeah. And again, like all you ever hear about is that, like, because of all the energy in the battery, that if you get into a wreck, you gotta, like, what is the procedure if you get into a wreck in an electric car? Do you need to get away from it just in case the battery pack starts to kind of do its thing?
So that shouldn't be that big of a deal, unless you already see a fire. So it depends on the severity of the crash, right? Because, yes, if you actually hit something hard enough to puncture and crack open the battery pack and the modules, and that if that actually triggers any of the cells, you'll want to get out of there as soon as possible. However, the battery pack, the way they're designed, and there's actually a photo of this, of a Model 3 that got into a crash where it caught fire, but the thing that caught fire was just one module. So all the modules are contained in their own fireboxes. And so this actually adds like quite a bit of, this is where the idea of, with a Roadster, you can just like stack two battery packs on top of each other. It's like, it's not quite that simple. There's a lot more for safety reasons that goes into that. So imagine if one of those modules catches fire and goes nuts, that may catch the vehicle on fire, the rubber and plastic and anything else, but the other modules there should be pretty well protected. Okay. Yeah, clearly you want to get away from it, but if you just get in a normal, you know, crash that the car isn't already on fire, it's, you know, I would guess that it's not much more likely of a danger than a regular gas car would be.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so it's going to be fair.
It's funny, like I wanna blame the Fudsters and the clickbait headlines and stuff like that. But like, I simultaneously, when I'm driving my car, I'm like, I am in the safest car in the world. But if I get into an accident, I'm running the hell away from this thing. You know, at the same time, I'm feeling both of those feelings.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find you that photo, man, because it was pretty. Yeah, here you go. Check it out. So I've got it here. This is from Inside EVs. Shout out to you guys for doing some good work there. So you can see, I don't know if you can, there you go. So this is a Model 3 battery pack, and that the car got into, as you can tell, a severe accident where I believe it kind of wrapped around a pole and it caught fire. But notice how it really was like just that front section there that it actually got damaged. Like the rest of it, if you look towards the middle and the back, it's totally fine, totally intact. And so that's kind of those fireboxes in action, where literally it's, you know, contained. Now, the thing is, there is still an epic amount of energy in there that's being released.
Yeah.
So it's not like a you know, oh, that's like a cute little flame. Like, no, that thing is freaking hot and nuts. But, you know, it's not like the whole thing's going to explode like if you had a tank of gas that or a tank of fumes, I guess, is really what explodes. But, yeah, point being, I don't really think that that's a major risk at all. So
I feel like they're basically being run by Wildfire from Game of Thrones. Because it burns green, doesn't it? The lithium batteries or whatever.
I don't know. So
I saw one video of a guy with a car on the side of the road. It was on fire, and it looked kind of green.
Hmm. He had an Instagram filter on. There's a thing we did actually at EV West one day, just kind of goofing around, as those guys like to do a lot, where we drilled a screw into an 18650 cell from a Model S. And that thing just took off like a firecracker, man. It just like, whoo, like flew off. I don't remember it being green at all. It was just kind of, it looked like a rocket engine. Maybe like a rocket engine that could take us to Mars.
Interesting. I wonder if something like that could go in the Starship prototype.
The what?
That thing.
Whoa, what are we looking at here, Joe?
Okay, so basically Elon tweeted a couple of new pictures of the Starship prototypes. I think this was the one down in Boca Chica. And so I'm sharing the Engadget article here, but I'm still blown away by this. I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around the idea that they're already putting these prototypes together. The Star Hopper, which Tim, got footage of, it did this little test run and everything. That was literally like a water tower with an engine on it. Well, now they're actually doing full-size prototypes of the actual Starship. Two of them. There's one in Boca Chica, one in Florida. And I've been hearing rumors. It's mostly from Tim, so we can throw him under the bus, but that they're going to be doing some kind of reveal toward the end of this month, some kind of update, and show off this new prototype. So, I mean, it's already, what is it, the 19th? So we're getting really close to the end of the month. We might be seeing this pretty soon. But yeah, so these are a couple of pictures that Elon tweeted. So there's that one that you're on right now.
Is there
which
one?
Doesn't that look like the same kind of tent that they use for the Model 3 line? I mean, I think it might be the same thing. So they're just putting that to more use. Yeah. So there's that picture, and then there's one down below. I think it's on that page there. Of after all the ads.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I don't know if it is on here.
This is free advertising. Well, it's on my screen. There's another picture. It looks like they're assembling it, and there's something hanging from a crane, and it's like this cylindrical circular thing. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like a mid-stage kind of thing, or maybe it's just a part of the ship or something. But it looks interesting.
So this is in Boca Chica, really?
I believe so. Yeah.
I feel like Tim would have seen it when he was down there.
Maybe it's in a different spot from when they were doing the Star Hopper.
Hmm. Maybe Boca Chica is bigger than I have been led to believe.
They may have different setups or different areas over there.
And I think the update's on September 28th, if I recall right.
That's what I've heard, yeah. I mean, but it still apparently is not completely official. At least Tim didn't think it was when we saw him last week.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to make plans for that. But no, okay, so according to this article, the first test flights, so they're going to have this thing possibly on the 28th, first test flights as soon as October. So wow. We're like a month away from actually seeing an actual Starship prototype. Like, can you believe
insane,
with that? That is insane.
And these things are massive, right? Can you, like, fit a Falcon Heavy inside of it?
Not the Starship. I think the bottom part, the Super Heavy part, which is not in development yet.
Oh, got it. Okay. So this is the upper stage?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah. I was thinking, because there's so many, they keep changing the names of them, right?
They have over the years, yeah. I think they've stuck with this one for the last year anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Starship is the upper stage that looks like an old school rocket, mm-hmm. and the Super Heavy is the first stage.
Got it. So it's Starship Super Heavy. Is the total full name? Okay, gotcha.
Well,
we'll see.
Determined? I don't know. Like originally they called it the ITS, the Interplanetary Transport System, and then of course the BFR was like the name of the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there is a name for the entire thing right now.
Hmm.
This is why Tim needs to be here, because I'm not completely sure.
So it's open for naming rights. Yes.
I guess so. Let's call it the Joe.
The Joe.
It'll be in Joe mode. by the way, I put this out on Twitter because I don't know the answer to this, but did Joe Rogan say something to Elon when Elon was on his show about wanting the chimes to be softer for his kids or something? Is that why it's called Joe Mode?
No, I don't think it's... it is named after a person named Joe, but I don't think it's Joe Rogan. I think it was a person on Twitter that asked for it who was named Joe.
Okay.
Yeah, well. if I'm correct here. And in fact, that brings us to something we didn't really prep for, but we can talk about it. And that is version 10 details are being leaked for Tesla. So the new version 10, which is going to include all kinds of fun stuff. Let me find a link with some details, and we can just kind of browse through this real quick. So in Tesla version 10 coming up, there's going to be this new Tesla Entertainment thing, which has an arcade and a theater, which will allow you to watch Netflix and YouTube.
So exciting.
And you have to be on Wi-Fi. I don't know if you can stream from your phone, like if you can pair your car to your phone and do it. I assume you could, but basically, you know, Teslas have built-in cellular connections, if you guys didn't know that, and that just come with the car, and they're not going to stream over that, obviously, because the data would be ridiculous, like hundreds of thousands of people just watching, you know, the entire season of Stranger Things or whatever. So that's coming. So this is cool for, especially if you have your own Wi-Fi hotspot and you're at a Tesla supercharger, or if Tesla, you know, adds Wi-Fi to their superchargers. That would be kind of a cool thing to do. Just be careful not to log in with your Tesla credentials, people. It's not safe. There's going to be some games, Cuphead, apparently, which is a game, and I don't even know what that is, but there you go. Elon apparently likes it. They also support an Xbox controller already, so you can do that, which is kind of fun if you want to play any of the other games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like I think one of those, because the beach buggy game or whatever it is, it's kind of hard to play. I don't know. Have you tried it at all?
Oh, I suck at video games anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like you like just barely turning the wheel, you're like spinning out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know. I'm sure some people are really good at it, but I've never had a chance because, you know, if my son is in the car and I flip it on, he's like, ah, and he's like comes up there and jumps on me, and it's like, okay, forget this thing.
So the thing where kids now, every time they see you with a phone, they're like, do you have any games on your phone?
Uh-huh.
Now it's gonna be with your car.
Right. Yeah.
Do you have any games in your car?
Hey, Uncle Joe got a new car. Cool. What kind of games does it have on it? What? It'll also have karaoke. So karaoke in your
karaoke.
Karaoke. It'll have, you know, so karaoke essentially in your car. And so this will work both while stationary and in motion, but lyrics will only be displayed while standing still. So make sure you know your lyrics, people. There's some cool. Now, these are kind of funny. They're going to have this feeling lucky or feeling hungry. So if you guys, you know, remember the days of Google when that was a thing, this is the future.
They went away.
Yeah. Yeah. What a bad idea that was. Shouldn't have invested in them.
Yahoo. I'm thinking Yahoo. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Ask Jeeves. So there's under Navigate right now, if you click Navigate, you'll see, I think, two shortcuts is home and work. They're going to add a lucky, as in it'll just take you to an interesting point, like a point of interest nearby. It'll just navigate you there. Also, hungry, which will be a very fun game that I plan to play with my wife, where we just get in the car and hit hungry and we go there and eat and tell you about it. And I'm sure it will go swimmingly well because, you know, husband and wife finding something to eat is not at all something that's hard. You know, it's just like an easy.
No,
that's like
it's not a daily compromise or anything.
That's basically the best part about marriage, is that when you're married, you have someone else to, you know, decide on what to eat, you know, for dinner. That's basically one of the benefits. Then
I've heard somebody say that being married is basically deciding to argue with somebody over what to eat for the rest of your life.
Yeah, right. You just ask yourself, you argue about where to eat until someone dies. There you go. That's marriage.
Yeah.
So then, of course, Joe Mode.
Woo!
And you absolutely, should we have our Ludicrous Future t-shirts that say Joe Mode is the best mode?
I think I need some mugs or some stickers or something with that. Like that was a legit tweet from Elon. It said Joe Mode is the best mode. I'm like, all right, I got to do something with that.
Yes, that is 100%. So this will reduce the volume of Tesla's chimes. So parking sensors or, you know, whatever else, you know, the one that's like, hey, idiot, take control. I'm about to hit something when you're in autopilot, you know, things like that. And this will, you know, keep your kids from waking up is kind of a thing, which if you're a parent like I am, this is awesome. The Tesla V10 driving visualization. Okay, so like where the car is displaying other objects, it's going to be better. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you need that, but okay, fine. just move on.
I just want the cars to stop dancing.
Oh yeah, fair.
I feel like that's actually gotten a little worse.
Yeah. So
am I crazy here?
Well, two questions.
Besides the obvious.
So if you guys aren't familiar with what Joe's talking about, when you're in your Tesla, in the model, well, I guess in the Model S and Model X too, where the car is displayed, it will show you cars around you, and right now. You know, tries to guess their position and the shape of the car. It'll have a truck versus a motorcycle versus a person versus a car. And they just bounce around like crazy. They look like they're humping each other. They look like they're humping you. It's just nuts. So
they're like turning and spinning in place.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it seems to work with the beat of whatever I'm listening to on the radio.
So that's kind of crazy. That's kind of so hopefully they'll just ratchet down the threshold on when it switches things, because of course the car is seeing something totally different, and what you're seeing is literally a representation just to give you peace of mind. That's the only purpose of that. It has nothing to do with what the car needs to see and do its job, because what it actually sees is very, very different than what you're seeing. So you know, hopefully they'll be able to fine tune that and tweak it. So
you kind of have to put C's in quotations. Actually,
yeah, right.
It sees differently than we do.
Yeah, there's going to be some new map improvements. So this would be good, and because the maps, I don't know, what's your experience with the maps, Joe?
I've never had a problem with the maps, really.
So some of the stuff is, and let me see if I can find a photo of this, because there's going to be, okay, so one of the things when you're, so I really like this. I think there's a couple major improvements that they could make that would be a big difference here. So when you search for something, now it's going to show you how far away it is, and then other things like about it, an actual rating. So Tesla V10 software.
Does it not show you how far away it is now?
Well, I believe it does, but it doesn't show you the ratings or whether or not the place is open or those things, right? So you're like, hey, navigate here, and you go there and you're like, what? Like, wait a minute.
I don't want to be in this part of town.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or you're just like, okay, it's not open. Why am I here? I had a great Electrek had a great article on it. Oh God, please people don't do that. Okay, anyways. So now there'll be more info when you navigate somewhere. It'll actually show you, you know, stuff about them. And I think that they could take this to another level that Google Maps already has. And I don't know if you use this, Joe, but there's a feature called Search on the Way. So if you're navigating, let's say, I don't know, to LA or something, or for you, you know, you're going to go see Chip and Joanna again, your good friends, and you're going to go down to Waco and you want to hit, you know, you want to get coffee on the way or something. So in Google Maps, you can click a button and say, find me, you know, a Starbucks or something on, like, in my route. So that way you're not like, hey, search for Starbucks. It's like, well, it's behind you. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be really awesome if you say in your car, navigate to wherever, and then you say, you know, find me coffee on the way. So I think that there's so many improvements that they can introduce here, and the fact that they're focusing on that is really helpful, I think. So it's kind of encouraging. Now Sentry mode is where, you know, the security system, whatever, those clips are going to be saved to a separate folder. They're still not visible on your car. I think that's really where this is going. If you guys aren't familiar, you know, right now you have to like, it's just really bad. And people have made apps that make this a bit easier, but still, like, personally, what I want to see, and I could probably do this, but I'm just assuming Tesla's going to do it for us, is I want a way to not only view Sentry mode clips, but then have timestamps of when something actually happened. Because the ones I've seen, it just shows you the clip and it could be like 17 minutes long and you're like, okay, what is this? Like, was someone here for
It's not stamped in the file name?
No. No, it's not like it saves you like 10 seconds before and after. It's like it's just that clip had a thing in it somewhere. Mm. So go find it, and you have to scrub through it, and it just kind of sucks. And it's not hard with computers today to like run it through an algorithm to find when something occurred, especially since you have the sensor data from the car that triggered the whole thing. So, you know, there you go.
So my Sentry mode and the Tesla cam in general has been not working very well lately. I feel like, and this is total assumption by my part, but I think that there might be a power issue to the USB outlets that are hidden underneath that phone thing.
Uh-huh.
Because the phone doesn't want to charge half the time. That's one thing. But then now it's telling me that the stick, it says that the speed of the USB drive is not fast enough. But it was a good USB drive that was brand new. I'd never used it before. There's nothing wrong with the USB drive, and it used to work just fine. Now suddenly I'm getting all these warnings saying that it's not working. So
I did have to go clear the data on mine recently, which I thought was weird because it's supposed to overwrite. And in fact, I think that's one of the updates here in V10 is that it will actually overwrite its own Sentry mode data, whereas before it wasn't. And so the thing that got me about it is you'd park on the side of the road and cars driving by would all be counting as events. And so I'd go get coffee and come get back and get in my car, and it'd be like 35 Sentry events. I'm like, okay, that was dumb. And so I think it's saving all of those clips, just like like loading it up. So yeah, so okay, well, that whole thing is getting better. It's still, honestly, it still should just be built into the car. I don't know if they don't have storage or what, but I mean, look, like I can, in my hand, you know, something the size of my thumbnail can handle like 500 gigabytes. That's a tremendous amount. It would make sense that somewhere in the car they could fit a terabyte or two for this. So I don't know if it's something they could retrofit or something that's already there or something that maybe is coming out, you know, in future versions, but you know, I think that it should just be built in. It shouldn't be, hey, format this USB stick. It's like the most hackerish thing ever, you know, for a company to do. So I think it's cool, but at the same time, it's like, eh, you know, it could be better.
Well, I'm supposed to have a guy come scheduled on Monday to come look at the seatbelt problem that I seem to be having.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that I know of that's a problem about it is that it's sending a warning up every 5 minutes, and it's kind of driving me nuts. But so he's supposed to come and look at that. I say this person is going to come look at that, and I'll ask about the USB thing while I'm at it, while he's there. We'll see.
So that's an important safety feature of your Tesla. Kind of reminds me of one of the more safety features of our planet, the ozone layer. No?
Okay, I'll take it. So yeah, there was an article that I ran into really just before we jumped on here, and I thought it was worth kind of bringing up because this is the kind of thing that I talk about. And actually, the video that I'm working on for this next Monday talks about greenhouse gases a bit, so it's kind of fresh in my mind. But this is a cool little animation here, actually. So it goes all the way back to 1979 up to this year, and you can see that, like, in the 90s. So let's jump back. The ozone hole over the South Pole. The reason the ozone is important is because it actually prevents UV rays from getting down to the ground. If we didn't have an ozone hole, we would all have skin cancer constantly, all the time. So when one formed in the late 80s, early 90s, and they found out it was from chlorofluorocarbons or hydrochlorofluorocarbons, CFCs or HCFCs. Mm. Yeah, lots of initials there. Long story short, I won't go into the mechanism of exactly how it goes up into the ozone and destroys these molecules, but it does that. It kind of breaks it down, turns it into like chlorine or something like that. But we started seeing this ozone hole over the Antarctic. Well, the good news is, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, the hole has been getting smaller over the years since we've banned chlorofluorocarbons. And I found out as I was researching this other video, first of all, ozone itself is a greenhouse gas. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we need greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases are good. If we didn't have greenhouse gases, all the heat from the Earth would escape out into space and we'd be way too cold and there wouldn't be any liquid water. We kind of need that.
It's a balance, right?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, now we're adding too much of these other greenhouse gases up there. But also the chlorofluorocarbons are also greenhouse gases. I didn't realize that either. So they're bad on multiple levels. But anyway, the point of this article, and we'll link it down below, was that there's a strange kind of polar vortex when you get up into the upper latitudes? Yeah. Of the North Pole and the South Pole, you start to get these weird vortexes that spin off, and that's why sometimes in the winter we'll get like a polar vortex here, down here in Texas. It'll just kind of like spin off of that, and suddenly it's super freezing. So they're having some issues like that. It's not an issue. It's just something that happened down around the South Pole, and the ozone hole has like taken on this weird shape and gone up over South America instead of down over the Antarctic. The problem there is that people live in South America, not a whole lot of people down in the Antarctic. So that's why they were a little bit concerned about that. But the hole has been continuing to get smaller. I think it's smaller this year than it has been for like the last 20 years or something like that. It's still not completely gone away. It's not a solved problem anymore yet, but it's getting better. And you know what? I think that shows that we can reverse these problems that we're creating in the world, you know, if you get serious about it. Everybody signed on for the CFC ban, although there is still some, since it's a rare chemical or rare product now, it actually has higher value to it. So there have been some smuggling operations over in Asia. So that's not good. But we were able to kick that problem.
Like the percentage of that is meaning like not right. It's trivial, right?
Yeah. I mean, that gives me hope. I mean, if we can fix that problem, I think we can fix the other problems as well. Now, granted, there's not factories every 20 miles all around the world spewing out chlorofluorocarbons like there are CO2, but
and it's not anyway. What we use to generate energy, which powers every single thing right. around us. So it's a little bit less of an issue, right? It's easier, kind of low hanging fruit there.
But we can pick the low hanging fruit, so we just need a ladder to get the higher fruit in the tops,
like
of the trees.
Maybe like a space ladder.
Space ladder.
You did a video on that, didn't you?
The space elevator.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. Well, a long time
I guess
ago,
yeah, a ladder that'd be that'd take a. take a lot of not many people
can
would
you extend
make that
a little
yeah
higher?
Just put your spacesuit on and climb this thing. It's only, you know, gazillion miles tall. The Montreal Protocol called. That's when we signed it.
Oh yeah, that's what killed the ozone or killed the chlorofluorocarbons that were killing the ozone.
So good. So this is good news that it's smaller than ever, but now but the confusing thing is that it's happening over a different spot. Or
that's the point of this article, basically.
And we're not sure why.
So it says in 2018, the hole reached a maximum area of 22.9 square kilometers, whereas it used to be in the thousands of square kilometers back in the day. But it does kind of wax and wane with the seasons by determined by how cold the temperature is. So in the winter, I don't remember which one it is. I don't know if it's, I think it's this time of year when it's usually at its maximum.
Just like my dad bod.
Right. but it's smaller this year. That's good news. If you're in South America, throw on some extra sunscreen for a while.
Right, because this lets more UV radiation in, and that, you know, as we discovered, is not Joe Scott's favorite thing. being in the sun in San Diego.
No, I splurged a little bit when I was in California and I got a convertible. I rented a convertible when I was up in San Jose and it was cool. But at the same time, I was like, this is completely wasted on me. I can't drive around with nothing over my head.
You're like, convertible. Wait, no, what am I thinking? Put that top down. You're like, what? Right, Why am I doing this?
It was down for like 5 minutes, and it's like, wait, this is a terrible idea.
My son saw a convertible for the first time the other day driving, and he was like, his mind was absolutely blown. He's like, what? Where's the what is happening? He's like, I want that. I'm like, no, it's just for tourists, son. Like, that's...
He's never seen a convertible before?
Well, they're not super common. And he's 4.
I mean, I figured in California they'd be more common than in other places.
It's usually a Mustang or some kind of Camaro or something, and it's just rental cars. It's just people. That's it. Like, nobody actually owns them. I'm pretty convinced that zero people in California own a convertible except for Jay Leno. And so that's really, you know, that was his reaction.
Huh. No, that's interesting. Like, I don't pay attention to convertibles, but I guess they're actually... It seems like they used to be more common.
It was like a cool thing for a while, right? In the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And now it's like, what? Why would you do that? That's dangerous, people. But I heard a...
you could just fly out the top of it.
No. Yeah, you better wear your seatbelt, you know?
Well, probably should anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, another time to wear your seatbelt is when you're driving around Laguna Seca in a Tesla going 99 miles per hour.
Probably should wear a helmet,
That's
too.
Probably a good idea. So... Tesla recently did that, and they set a track record at Laguna Seca for four-door vehicles with 17-inch touchscreens, you know? this is part, and we talked about it last week at the live show, but if you guys didn't have 2.5 hours to listen to us yammer about it, here we are again. And so Tesla's updating the Model S. This is incredible. And they have a new thing called the Plaid powertrain. It's going to have 3 motors, going to have... I'm presuming a lot of other stuff coming along with it. It's going to be a 7-seater, which you can't actually call it a 7-seater unless you can fit a non-child in the seat. Unlike the previous 7-seater Tesla Model S, which was a 5+2, they call this a 7-seater. I don't buy it, but we'll see. And the reason this is exciting, not just because of Laguna Seca and what they did there, but Tesla has reportedly also broke the record at the Nürburgring. I'm sorry, it didn't break the record, but beat the Porsche Taycan by nearly 20 seconds. And that would be a...
Oh, so they did do the run.
Well, this is unofficial, yes.
Okay.
And everything now is like, oh, they're still testing, they're still tuning, they're still doing whatever. And Paul Merrick here on the Twitters posted some photos and some stuff with Nico Rosberg, who I believe is an F1 champion. Yeah, 2016 F1 racing world champion, who had tweeted a response to Elon saying, hey, you're going to Nürburgring, you need a driver? Let's do this. And Elon responded to him, awesome, yeah, let's hang. So apparently those are like, they're still maybe in talks or something. I don't know. But photos of the Model S are being shown, and I'm putting them on here. I'll put a link to this. Paul Merrick, thank you for posting these, because they are awesome. Notice the badging on this, P100D Plus.
Ah.
So this is the thing. They finally got some good-looking rims on this. The exterior of the car otherwise is unchanged. This photo here, man, like, I am just such a nerd. I would love to be here right now. So what we're looking at, if you guys are just listening, is a photo from a Tesla Model S at the Nürburgring. And there's just a crew of engineers here. Hood open. You got a driver with the helmet. They're like testing gear. They're like hooking this thing up. They're like just tuning it. Man, I don't even know what a value I could add there. But that would be, I would love to hang and just absorb the brilliance and awesomeness that goes into making the Model S even faster. So this will have the updated, obviously, the Raven suspension, which came out and is, you know, publicly available, along with a few other things. And I'm guessing that we're going to see a new battery pack here. I'm really expecting that this car is going to have a V3 charging ability, which also probably means that it'll have a lot more range, hence the badging P100D Plus. There's some other photos of one here as well. As Elon had said, there were a couple of them that were there. So here's like they're putting on the rear spoiler, because that's going to, you know, make a big difference there.
It's like taped on.
Yeah, that's how they do it. It's usually double-sided tape, and it's just super sticky. But the tires that they're using here on these are the Pilot Sport Cup 2 Michelins, which are like these super high-end racing kind that I believe that are pictured on the Tesla Roadster. And these rims are, I'm guessing, different as well. There's some crazy kind of carbon fiber brakes that are being shown. I mean, this is just, man, this is like, I'm really pumped about this.
Okay, so that one that you were just showing, that was just like out in the wild.
No,
somewhere.
So you can see the other one right in front of it, right?
Oh, so that was at the Nuremberg.
Yeah, I'm just going to just excuse me if I don't pronounce it right, because there's two places, yeah, right, that are far from each other. There's Nuremberg Ring and Nuremberg. I don't know, whatever. It's it's where they do the racing. Yeah, so yeah. I think the other one is right there in front of it. This one is there, and there's even more photos of, in fact, right here you see these carbon fiber brake rotors and stuff, which are obviously designed for high speed, high performance. Stuff not really needed in most people's day to day. Yeah, you see some other looks of the red Model S here. I mean, dude, this thing is just incredible, man. This does look a little bit different. The bottom here looks a little bit different.
It looks a little streamlined.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
It's this is like a wide body
angled. Yeah.
So this is actually,
I was thinking that earlier, but I wasn't completely sure.
Yeah, which is pretty common. I think a lot of like race cars have kind of a wide body style, and I know you know, like up in LA at Unplugged Performance, they do that where you can actually buy that. So man, this is just, I'm just so pumped on this, because I mean, the way I see it, you know, the Model S is returning to its kind of rightful place on the throne. And this had to have been in development for a long time, but the timing of it right after the Porsche Taycan unveiling is kind of, I don't know, it's good. Like, that was the whole point. It was like, yeah, nobody's going to buy a $185,000 Porsche Taycan that doesn't even beat the current Model S. But if it gets Tesla off their butt and start doing stuff like this, awesome. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So reportedly, they beat the Taycan's time and all the photos. I mean, there's just so much going on here. Now, Elon had said that basically we're not going to see any of this in production until late next year, which goes against rumors that, in, you know, leaks that have already come out about this. So the question is he sandbagging because he doesn't want people to stop buying the Model S now? Or is he being overly optimistic like he usually is and it'll be 3 years from now? Or is he being kind of on? I mean, so you kind of just have no clue. You know, right, when he says in production a year from now, it could be early next year, you know, just a couple months away. Or it could be 2 years from now. You don't really know.
So can you explain the Raven thing to me?
Not really.
Okay. I didn't know if it was a new motor or...
it's the suspension upgrade, right? The newest Model S Raven. Yeah, it's the adaptive suspension is the deal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I believe that they said that you could also charge faster, but I've not seen that at all. I've not seen it in the data. I've not seen anybody post an actual Raven Model S or X charging above 150 kilowatts at V3 chargers, which is what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to get up to 200 kilowatts, which, again, I believe it will happen. It's just, you know, I've not seen it and no one's posted on it. So here's some
shots.
What
does the charging rate have to do with the suspension?
No, these are the Raven wasn't a name just about the suspension. The Raven was kind of related to numerous things that were updated. I believe, in fact, when they updated the model, put it in the Model 3 motor, I believe that was also part of the Raven deal. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that. Someone, you know, not that I have to ask, but please let us know in the comments if that's wrong. But here, we're showing a photo here from Electric about the different air suspension. Supposedly, it's more adaptive. I don't know, man. Do you really notice? Do you think anyone, like, this to me is the, hey, we added a new camera to the iPhone. You're like, okay. Do I need that? Like, I thought two cameras was like one more than I needed. I mean, like, do I really? I don't know. You know, you get to the point where you're like, I'm not going to like sell my $100,000 car to buy this one just because it has like this incremental tiny little difference. Yeah. You know, even air suspension versus coilover suspension is like, it's not that the one's necessarily better than the other. I think they're different. And depending on your use case, one may actually be better than the other, and you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that I've ever had a car with air suspension, so I wouldn't even know. It's never been an issue for me, but I don't know. If I had a car with it, I might be like, I'm never going back. My butt's never felt better.
So I've had both, and I can tell you, it's not much of a difference.
Oh, okay.
The only cool thing is that you can raise and lower it. To me, that's kind of the cool thing. So, like at my son's school, when I drop him off, the alleyway there is kind of bumpy, and you know, it's San Diego, like where our roads aren't the best, and so there's kind of potholes everywhere and stuff. So I hit, you know, go to the very high suspension, so it actually raises up the vehicle and gives me more ground clearance. And then it remembers that location. So when I go back, it automatically does that. I don't have to actually do it again. So, you know, I think there's some benefits to it. But just in terms of your normal driving, I would guess that you'd kind of have a hard time telling the difference, you know, other than those kind of special scenarios. So I don't know. It's a thing. I guess it's like a feature. It's like one of those where you're like, okay, it's not going to like make me, you know, buy it versus one that doesn't have it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what Raven was about, was updating that along with, I think, the motor and a few other things.
Cool.
There you have it. Now, do you want to talk about the ID4? Because you kind of were excited about the ID3 last week, right?
I expressed that I have a history with Volkswagen going back, and it's sort of always been a little part of my identity, I guess. You know, that was my thing, even though they're kind of the bad guys now. So I want to see them be successful with an electric car, and I thought the ID3 specs were pretty impressive. It was pretty legit. Unfortunately, it's apparently not going to be released in the United States for some reason, but their ID4, unless I'm mistaken, is supposed to be coming out in the United States. So there was that article by Electrek or whatever you had up just a second ago, or Inside EVs, that was talking about, yeah, it's saying that it could undercut the Tesla Model Y by $24,000.
That's insane.
They're calling it the VW Cross. Cross.
Why, like, I want to start a consulting company on just naming electric cars. And I'm not going to suggest any names. You just, as a car company, send me names, and I just automatically reply with no. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, terrible, bad. Don't do that. Like, what a dumb man. I just.
It's like you want to be like, you do want to sell these, right? Oh, you don't. Oh, okay.
Right. There you go. So VW, yeah, talking about this, that it would be comparable price to their other sedan in this space. And what we're seeing here is like a concept on the screen. This isn't like a real thing. So there's the ID3 and the ID4. I think there are some ID. Yeah, here's some shots of the ID4, some spy shots where it has that really funny looking. I don't know what you call this. Some kind of pattern,
yeah,
to make it.
Is it meant to just like throw off the angles and stuff so you can't really see what it looks like or something? Or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like you can't see where the contour lines are or whatever. And I think that's probably because it's still being refined. They don't want it to actually. It would be kind of cool if there was a company that sold a wrap like this. You could just wrap any car in that. Just like
everybody's like, wow.
You're like, whoa, is that
it? You know, that's how they camouflaged ships in World War One.
Was with the same thing, this pattern?
Similar idea, yeah. It was like black and white stripes. They kind of put zebra stripes on them because it confused. I guess they didn't have radar at the time, so it was all visual, and the stripes had some visual optical illusion that kind of threw people off.
Like if you're looking through it super far away, the heat would be wavy, and it would kind of just
something
look like wavy.
That.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, so the ID...
That's your fact for the day.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, what was the... There was a video you told me to watch. Somebody that does this awesome history stuff on... Because we were talking about this, how, like...
Oh, you're talking about World War One.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the podcast Hardcore History.
Mm.
It's not on video. It's a podcast thing, but...
Well, then
great breakdown of World War One and how that whole thing worked and how horrifying every second of that whole thing was.
Yes.
Good Lord.
So, the ID3, speaking of horrifying... was there are three models of it, battery sizes with names. Unfortunately, none of them include turbo, so that would be cool. The Pure, the Pro, and the Pro S, and they range from 145 miles estimated WLTP standard, so whatever, up to 340 miles on the Pro S. So the
You need to do your video about the WLTP because I'm totally confused by that whole thing.
Yeah, well, it's funny because the more I researched it, the whole point of that standard was to try to get more accurate. But then when you look, so the reason people really look at the WLTP standard, which is what they use, it's like the EPA rating in Europe for electric cars. The reason people joke about it is because you look at it and you go, okay, in the US, the Model S long range, whatever, is 370 miles. In the WLTP, it's like 600 miles. And you're like, what? Like, how are these? They're so far off that even 370 miles, I think, is, as Robert Llewellyn always told me, is like, you know, driving on a slight decline in the Netherlands on a perfect day. You just kind of coast, you know. You're like, yeah, that's when you'll actually hit that range. So if the EPA rating is a bit optimistic, let's say, mm-hmm. and the WLTP is like 30% higher than that, what are they smoking? Like, where is this coming from? So I do need to do a video breaking it down and try. I mean, myself as well, trying to understand it, because I just look at the numbers and I go, huh? Right? Yeah. You look at it, you go, well, this doesn't make sense. So yeah, maybe I'll do that soon. So there you have it. So VW i3, those are the specs, 145 to 340 miles. So the VW i4, I think, is still very concept-ish and not really, like, it's not, like, been unveiled and, hey, it'll be available next month or something. But if they're able to do it and they're able to keep the price down, that could introduce some competition in the crossover electric SUV space, which really right now is basically the Model X. And maybe a Toyota RAV4 EV from 2012.
I know you've become a fan of that one recently.
I seriously love it. Like, if they could make that 300 miles of range, it would sell insane. It would sell like crazy. You know, because it's Toyota and people love, you know, have that affinity or whatever. So, okay, so VW i4, hopefully the price is going to be good and the range is good and it creates competition. Because the only other person in that space is Rivian. And speaking of Rivian.
Okay. Oh, Amazon buys into Rivian, has reportedly ordered 100,000 delivery vans. I'm just reading your headlines now.
Thank you, sir. So.
Did your job for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm done. okay. So Rivian, if you guys don't recall, is another EV startup that is making an electric truck, the R1T. And they have an SUV version of it, the R1S. By the way, congrats on naming them things that, like, make some sense, right? And the beauty of that is that, like the Model 3 to the Model Y, where they share something like 75% of the same parts and everything, Rivian's truck and SUV are the same. So it literally is like they just put a shell on the back and added a couple seats, and bam, you've got it. I've seen both of them in person. I went to the unveiling and got really up close with the truck. They didn't have the SUV there. Really stoked on this. I really, really think they're doing a great job from a design standpoint, from all the bells and whistles. And the specs of the Rivian stuff is outstanding. It's like over 400 miles on the truck. I mean, hallelujah that someone is coming out with something competitive that's going to drive us forward and not some kind of half-hearted, you know, 200 mile range nonsense that nobody's going to buy. So the news, as you alluded to, is that Amazon buys into Rivian and has reportedly ordered 100,000 delivery vans. And so the investment is $700 million. And don't forget that Ford also invested in Rivian, right. I think to the tune of $400 million. I forget if it was $400 or $500 million, but they've got a lot of money coming. And the good news is, you know, Rivian's actually been around since 2009. So they've been around for a while and they have a factory. The factory is not retrofitted yet, so they're still dealing with that. But they also have a place in Irvine, not too far from here, making the battery packs. So they've got a real shot here, it feels like. Unlike a lot of the other EV startups that, you know, we don't even talk about anymore. So this to me is super exciting because, first off, it's a lot of money that's going to help them, you know, have a chance of success. They've got a great design. They've got a great specs. They're really doing the thing. And a delivery van, to me, I don't know if they have any sketches of it here. A delivery van, this is something that I really wanted Tesla to do. Because Amazon, as you can imagine, they're the ones doing it here. It makes total sense. The economics of electric cars just destroy gas cars. So if you are Amazon and you want to literally conquer the world and have these vans delivering stuff to people's houses every 10 minutes, an electric version of that makes total financial sense, which is what's going to drive all these decisions. And so this is great. So basically they're going to take the Rivian truck and turn it into like a Sprinter van that is used for deliveries for Amazon. Hallelujah. That's exactly what I wanted Tesla to do at the pickup truck unveiling. But of course, Tesla's, you know, motto is like, let's go punch these guys in the teeth and let them know we're not playing around. And they came out with a Class 8 semi-truck instead. But this makes a whole lot of sense. I'm really pumped on it. I really hope they pull it off. I might even consider buying one if they're like a Dodge. Called a Sprinter, but I think they Dodge white labels them here, but Mercedes makes them. So whatever, a Sprinter van. If they could have an electric one with 400 miles of range, I might be into that for like surf trips and stuff like that, you know?
I've been thinking about this a lot lately about how, it's great that consumers are getting more interested in electric cars. It's still a very small percentage of what's out on the roads right now. But really the logistics and transportation sector of just moving things around, like we're talking about here, whether it's the Tesla Semi and the bigger kind of things like that, or just like these little delivery vans around town. I want to see a lot more movement in that direction, because people are talking now about like how to cut down on CO2 and stuff like that. And you hear people talk about a carbon tax.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the idea of a carbon tax in theory, but if you tax carbon emissions on logistics and stuff like that, then, I mean, they're just going to pass that on to us. They're going to pass that on to the consumers.
Right. Have you dove into the carbon tax idea deeper? Because the stuff I've read is basically you would remove other taxes.
Oh, okay.
So, in fact, I think it was George Bush's like economics chief or somebody that was the one that's still kind of the big guy doing it. And basically it was like, get rid of corporate income tax, get rid of personal income tax entirely, just gone. States can do their own thing, but federally, and instead impose a carbon tax. And that would more than pay for all the revenues lost from that, give people more income to spend on things, which would juice the economy. Also give companies more incentive to spend, because they wouldn't be, like, instead of spending a gazillion dollars trying to find loopholes and dodge taxes, you can just, hey, forget that and just keep the money, spend it, pay dividends, grow your business, do whatever you got to do. Now, if you happen to be in a business that does a ton of things that are very carbon, you know, that emit a ton of greenhouse gases, then you're going to have to pay that. But this would be a clear incentive for you to not do that. And that's probably easier and better for all of us than you just hiring more lawyers, you know, which is kind of currently, it's a Pigovian tax. Have you heard that term before?
Pigovian?
Pigovian.
Oh.
I believe it's some economist. I'm looking at that's how to spell it. But the concept I think is fascinating, where basically like the true cost of a thing is not fully represented or accounted for in the price of a thing. So cigarettes is a good example, where, you know, the cost of making a cigarette is X. A person buys a cigarette for X plus, you know, profit, essentially, whatever the markup is. But cigarettes cause that person, as well as other people around them, health problems. Those health problems increase the cost of healthcare, because they overrun and, you know, overtax those systems. Those things are paid for through taxes that people that don't even smoke or aren't affected at all, have to pay. So the true cost of that cigarette, for example, is not just those two items. It's not what the person pays and what it costs to make it. It's the total cost of the effects of it. So a carbon tax is essentially that. Like if you make energy, or if you make cars or something, those things actually, you know, pollute the environment. They cause, climate change, and that racks up billions of dollars by, like, you know, sea level rise and all these other things. Like, there are so many other costs associated with climate change that are caused by this thing, but that thing doesn't have to pay for any of that stuff. So the idea behind a Pigovian tax would be to try to offset that and say, okay, look, well, your car is actually causing all this cost over here, so let's include some of that, or let's tax you for all of that stuff as best we can to incentivize you to change that behavior, or just own it and say that's how much it costs. That's the idea there.
Well, that's part of it. I feel like we subsidize oil and fossil fuels in this country to an extreme amount. Like when I was over in Europe this summer, the gas there was like €3 or €4 per liter.
Right.
And there's like 3.75 liters per gallon. So it was really more like $10 to $12 a gallon is what they're paying over there. Yep. And here we're like 2 to 3. So it's artificially deflated because of the subsidies. And like part of me wants to say, well, get rid of these subsidies for this industry that's polluting the planet. Well, then the cost of everything would go up because the cost of gas would go up. But I feel like if we could get this electric transition going in that space, that would sort of, well, first of all, just like you said before, the economics just work better for those companies. Like you're going to spend less money driving those cars around if they're electric and get longer life out of those cars as well. But anyway, like I feel like that might be a sort of a bulwark against, like, if we could lower, clearly I'm still working this out in my mind. If we can lower the subsidies on oil and gas and increase the number of electric vehicles out there, that could kind of even out that price difference.
Yeah. I would love if anyone has a great video explaining this, because I don't want to call it a movement, but there's like a website or something. I think it's called like End the Subsidies for Fossils or something like that, for fossil fuels. And there's a whole thing here. And because some study just came out, it was something like 6.5% of global GDP was spent on subsidizing fossil fuels. That's like worldwide. So in some countries it's very different. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, I mean, everybody gets a subsidy in one way or the other. Like that's the funny thing. There's like direct ones and indirect ones. And if you look back, some of the interesting stuff was around the gas crisis in the 70s here in the United States, where we painfully realized how dependent we are on foreign oil. And so, hey, let's give subsidies to companies to eliminate that dependency we have. And we're going to give you tax breaks galore on things like building refineries here in the U.S. And so we've, you know, spent billions of dollars subsidizing that 40 years ago. That's why gasoline today in the United States is like something like the 13th cheapest of any country in the world, which when you tell people that, their mind is blown. They're like, what do you mean? Gas is expensive. Like, no, it's not. Right. It's really, really not. So there's probably like a hardcore history podcast on this. That would be fantastic. Somebody that just breaks it down, like, why is gas so cheap in the United States? And first off, you have to go, wait, gas is cheap in the United States? Yes, it is. And then you break down how we got here. I think that'd be a really fascinating story because, like you said, the point I'm trying to make is, like, everybody gets a subsidy one way or the other. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. Anything that's in, like, the, you know, public's interest or that people lobby hard enough to get, there will be a subsidy for. You know, and it's just one of those things. Like farmers, you know, there's the classic dirt farmer kind of a thing where the government actually paid people to not farm. Because, you know, things like that. So
My grandparents had a farm, and I remember hearing that when I was a kid, and I was like, what?
Right.
You get paid to not farm?
Right.
But I understand what, you know, when you look back at the Dust Bowl and what caused that, it was the overuse of the land. So this is a way to prevent that from happening again. So it makes sense, but
exactly. And we don't live in we have, you know, the semblance of a free market here. So the government the government can do things like say, hey, you need a permit to do this, and we're only going to issue X number of permits, because if we issued more than that, then the supply of something, let's say corn, would be way too high, and that means global prices would drop, which means exports, our price that we export this stuff to, say, China or someone, would drop dramatically, which then hurts the overall economy. I mean, these things are like like this is why economics to me is so fascinating, because it's like this giant puzzle, and literally like a slight change in one thing can have a massive ripple in right. all these other aspects of it. And so the government tries to control those things, but we're not in somewhere like China where they can literally just come in and say, hey, don't do that. Like, you're no longer allowed to do that. I don't care if that means you can't eat. You know, here yeah. there has to be, you know, more the other ways of basically accomplishing the same thing. So it's pretty fascinating stuff. But yeah, these, if we could have a way to incentivize companies to go electric, that would be a great one right there, by having some sort of carbon tax. But yeah, you'd have to mm-hmm. limit that. You'd have to like offset that by removing a tax somewhere else. Otherwise, people are just going to like lose their mind on it. You know, it's just not yeah. going to happen. So,
well, getting back to Rivian, do you know of a timeline of theirs for actually getting their trucks out there?
I think the trucks, it said it here, the deliveries of the first product, the pickup, are expected at the end of next year. So,
2020.
And the vans, that's the pickup truck. The first vans will be hitting public roads, according to them, in 2021. And all 100,000 are supposed to be in service by 2024. So, and that's from CEO Jeff Bezos. So,
well,
good news, man.
Good news. I would like it if it was faster, but you know, patience.
Well, I mean, so for you know, there's Elon time.
I'm just kidding with it. Okay.
We've got anyway. That.
Well, we should probably start to kind of wrap this up, I think, because I don't know how long Ben's thing is going to be. Watch him come in with like a 40-minute.
Tim's yeah
bit, and this thing goes like 3 hours long.
Well, that's all good. So what are you working on there, Jose?
I was talking about the greenhouse gases thing. That's coming up on Monday. We're still kind of putting the final touches on it, but I'm basically asking, what's the worst greenhouse gas? And it's not what you think it is.
I think I have.
Of course, it depends on what your definition of worst greenhouse gas is. If it's like what is the most of it in the atmosphere, what contributes the most to the warming of and cooling of the planet, mm-hmm. Versus like what chemical holds the most energy.
Mm.
I get into all that anyway. I don't want to spoil it too much because it is a shocking revelation.
The suspense is killing me. Awesome.
Yeah. It's just kind of a different way of looking at it. And I'm confirming what I'm saying with a climate specialist, because I don't want to say anything wrong.
Look at you. See, I intentionally say stuff wrong to get people going, because everyone, people are going to be mad no matter what you do. You're going to say something wrong, guaranteed. So just give them something to be mad about. I just, you know, like autopilot sucks. We'll just throw that out there and be, how could you?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, that happened today. My video that came out this morning was about how, like, basically Coca-Cola used to have cocaine in it, mm-hmm. you know, and how cocaine used to be in just everything. Well, I was making the point at the end that cocaine use has gone down, but maybe it's because we're over-caffeinated as a society. Like, there's caffeine in everything, and people are vaping nicotine like crazy, and now we're starting to see some stuff in the news about health issues with some people have died from vaping stuff, and
imagine
that was that. Just like a little that was just a little side thing that I said, where we're now like replacing cocaine with these other things, and that's what my Twitter post was about. I think I angered a lot of Kyles out there by insulting vapors or something. So that's what everybody's focusing on and getting all mad about, and I'm like, that's not what the whole point of the video is about. But if I'm doing a video about something like climate change or you know, something in that direction, I want to make sure that the details are right. I certainly don't want to give any ammunition to any of the skeptics and deniers out there to be like, oh, they're lying about this, that, and the other because I got something wrong. And I also just want to make sure I'm putting accurate information out. So, you know,
see, such a good guy you are, Joe.
I try.
I just don't care. I just throw it out there.
If it gets views, it's worth it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, there's a number here somewhere. But in fact, my next week's video is
what are you working on?
Is a bit free of there's a little bit of data in there. It's about whether or not you should wait to buy a Tesla. And there's tell me if you like this. So there's two concepts that I break down. One is what I call feature anxiety. And it's kind of like FOMO for the latest and greatest thing. So unlike Apple, which has fallen into a rhythm and we know when the new phones are coming out and you're okay with your phone because we know that the next one is just slightly better. It's not like dramatically better. You know, Tesla doesn't really do that. They don't have like a release cycle of new cars. It's like when they, you know, Tim's thing, when it's done kind of a thing, right? Or actually before it's even done usually. But point being, there definitely is a sense of like, well, if I buy a Tesla now, there's all these rumors about this plaid mode coming out. And Elon said this, and what does that mean? And so I break that down. And so that's feature anxiety, I'm calling it, or fear of missing a feature. I don't know. And the other one is price anxiety. And that's one where I have actual data. Somebody on Google, on the internets, has actually been tracking the price of every single Tesla model, like forever or whatever, the past couple years. And it's kind of interesting to see just a chart of them jumping up and down because it's not just all been down. Like the price has went down and then jumped right back up. So there's this kind of thrashing back and forth of, hey, I bought my car and now it's $7,000 cheaper the next day. And people are like, people are really pissed. This guy, Chris Titus, I don't know who he is, but he's on Twitter and he's like a person that's angry about it. And he's like a talk show host or something. I don't really know. But anyway.
Is he a comedian? There's a comedian named Christopher Titus.
Yeah, he like yells a lot. And you can kind of.
Well.
I mean, his profile pic is him yelling. So I assume that's like he's one.
Okay. He's the guy that yells.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. I've maybe seen something from him. I don't really know. But anyway, so yeah, your price, you know, can jump up and down. I mean, but think about how awesome it would feel if you were on the other side of that. If you're like, oh, I bought my car, and then tomorrow it was $10,000 more. You're like, woo, hallelujah. Like, I love this company. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they weren't joking. So, you know, there's price anxiety and feature anxiety and just kind of breaking those down, helping people figure out whether or not they should wait. And it's kind of a nuanced answer, right? It depends on your situation. So that's what's going on there. But there's not a lot of data, right? It's just like a couple data points. Here's a couple things that happened. I don't know.
I remember when they dropped the Model 3 prices and some people were upset because they had spent more money on it. I fully expected the price to go down over time when I bought mine. I fully expected that at some point it would be selling for cheaper than what I paid for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was kind of okay with it. I mean, it wasn't. It's one of those expectation versus reality thing. I already expected it to happen. So when it happened, it was like, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, what? You know.
Well, I think there's a timing too, right? I really do think they should have like a 30-day price guarantee or something like that, where it's like, hey, if you buy it today, I mean, because what happens is people will buy and then the price drops, so they cancel their order and then they buy again at the lower price. Oh. It's just like so to me that creates inefficiency in the system. And Tesla does not need efficiency in the invoicing processing of paperwork system. That's not their strong suit at all. So
that's a fair point.
Yeah. So anyways, but yeah, you're right. I mean, the price goes down. I think it's just more, there have been a couple times in Tesla's history, like when Autopilot 1 came out and you couldn't retrofit the other cars, like, ooh, that is a deal killer for a lot of people right there. That, you know, but we haven't really seen anything like that since. So
Yeah,
that's a thing. I also want to mention next Friday, I will be hanging out with the San Diego Tesla Club. So if you guys want to come hang with me in San Diego, you can do so. I'll put a link.
Oh, look at that. You got your picture on the website and everything. You little celebrity.
Yay.
He has posted over 400 videos and is followed by over 150. Man. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, it's like I'm a person. Yeah.
That's my buddy.
So it's funny, the 400 videos thing, because that's like a tremendous amount of videos, but a big chunk of those are just the highlight videos where I would record for an hour talking about the news and then that would turn into five videos. So anyways. So it's at Elijah's Restaurant, 6 to 9 p.m. You do need to RSVP, so check the link, all that stuff in the description if you want to come hang out with me. I don't know why I agreed to that's do awesome. This, but, you know, I like meeting people, so maybe that's
it. No, that's
it.
Cool. I actually looked into if Dallas has a and somebody out there in the comments may correct me on this, but, like, if Dallas had a Tesla club that I could go, not to make an appearance as a celebrity or something, but like, just to go hang mm-hmm. out, you know? But the only thing that I found was it looked very defunct. Like, the last post on their site was in 2017 yeah. or something, and... So I'm kind of amazed by that.
Yeah. Yeah, because...
There's got to be something out there. I'm just not finding it.
Like the guy that owns Teslanomics.com. Is that still... Kills me. It's like, it was like a blog, and then he stopped posting in 2014. And I'm like, dude, I will buy this domain from you. Let me give you money. No response. Cannot get a hold of the guy. Even messaged him on Facebook. I'm like, whatever, man. Fine. All right. Well, I think that does it, man.
Okay.
We will see you guys in
our ludicrous future. Hey, thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do and you want to kind of help get it out there, you can give us a nice review on any of your podcast streaming platforms, whichever one you use. That kind of helps get it out there. Also, we do have a Patreon set up, so you can join us there at patreon.com/ourludicrousfuture. You can get your name in the credits, meet a whole other group of like-minded people. It's a lot of fun. We do appreciate it. We'll see you there. Thanks.